Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure. Damn, we did that well.
Oh, yeah, we can say our names.
Yes, okay, so today is Saturday, July 18th, the year of our Lord, 2015. So if that's true, you're welcome to give us a call at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And if that's false, then trying to call us would be frustrating. And this is the Personal Wealth Coach. We already said that. But the Personal Wealth Coach has a dual identity or is schizophrenic, depending on how you want to look at it. Because first off, there's two of us in here. And we try to function as sometimes dysfunctionally. And then the other thing is,
the program doesn't say the Personal Wealth Coaches, and yet it is. And
right.
Yet it isn't, because we are the Personal Wealth Coach together.
But the Personal Wealth Coach has yet a third identity.
Dun, dun, dun.
It is a business entity that resides in Salado, Texas, and is registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission to offer investment advice to people who will pay them.
Yes, for a fee.
For a fee, yes. Fee only, as a matter of fact. We do not take kickbacks under any circumstances. So that makes us pretty weird and somewhat more poor.
I said that to a horse once, by the way. I don't take kickbacks, and the horse just completely ignored me.
Well, that horse wasn't in the kickback mood anyway.
No. It didn't give me a kickback either. But
okay.
It looked at me like, yeah, you'll take a kickback if I want to give you a kickback.
If I want to give you a kickback, you'll get a kickback. Yeah, okay. Anyway, so the telephone number is again in here. If you would like to ask us any questions, make any comments, or provide any thoughts, which we're short of today, about the world, local, or otherwise economic or investment stuff.
Stuff.
Yes. Again, it's 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
All right. Well, we were gone last week. For those of you who
for those of you who were here,
noticed,
we were gone.
Yes.
If you didn't notice, then that's fine. We didn't notice either.
But an event happened during this last week that is extremely, this is, should be a word there following that, but I don't have it. Okay, it's an extreme example. It's a prime example. That's a good one. It's a very good example.
Do you mean Prime Day?
Why we don't do market timing.
Oh, you don't mean Prime Day.
No.
You said a prime example.
Well, it is it's a principal example. A prime example meaning an important first, primus meaning first level, first order
right.
of example.
Okay.
The major indices or indexes, depending on whether you want to be properly Latin-y or properly American-y in your language.
I think a lot of it has to do with the emphasis in the wrong syllable.
Okay. So the two major indices, well, let's put it like this. The S&P 500 rose 2.41% last week, following a strong signal that it would do so, which is I was actually contacted by several people who suggested maybe they ought to get out of the market because the market was about to plunge. So that's a good signal that we're about to have a jump upward in the market, which is why we don't do market timing.
Yes.
So that's, the whole issue is that they're still a little depressed about the whole thing because the S&P 500 for the 52-week period from last year at this time is up a whopping 7.5%. Year-to-date, though, it's up 3.29, which was much better than it has been.
Well, but 3.29 doesn't seem like very much when you're looking at a portfolio that's been up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down all year long.
Yeah, and I've looked at a lot of portfolios, and mostly they have done next to nothing for the last year, which is good. If your portfolio has done very little in the last year,
you should be
smiling about that, because if you had a Greek portfolio, it would have done a lot. You've seen a lot of excitement.
There would have been a lot of changes in your portfolio.
A lot of things. And, it was funny. 2 weeks ago when I was preparing for this this program, I had a heck of a time trying to find anything to talk about.
Really?
Yeah. And then
I had stuff that I didn't get to.
Well, I didn't get to, but it was relatively minor stuff. I got in the research I was doing yesterday and today for this program, I found so much stuff that we could talk for the rest of the week and
we
never get
could.
To it all.
And I'm what's interesting is between the two of us, we may have a little bit of an overlap on the subject matter, but I suspect that we both have really good subjects that the other one doesn't have, which means that we could talk for 2 weeks instead of 2 hours. And for those of you out there that are excited about this, you're a nerd, just like us.
Right.
Thank you.
A couple of things happened during the week to cause this bump upward. Those who read the European tea leaves concluded, and by the way, this is because of the actions of the German Parliament.
Yep.
That the Europeans have finally figured out that it would be a really, really bad idea to allow Greece to sink beneath the waves. And it would cause great economic pain and disruption and a potential phenomenal loss to the Germans. And they finally figured out that coughing up a mere $100 billion to keep them from
euros. Yeah, well, $100 billion.
I translated it from euros into dollars. It's round figures. Mm-hmm. You know, $100 billion here, $100 billion there. Pretty soon, you're talking about some real money. Anyway, in essence, the Germans are going to foot most of this bill, and the European, the group of nations that are the Eurozone. This is what's amazing. They have to unanimously agree on anything or it can't happen. And they unanimously agreed that they would cough up $100 billion and loan it to Greece, fully aware of the fact they'll probably never get it back.
Yeah, they unanimously agreed that Germany would cough up $100 billion.
That's what I was going to say. We all agree that you're going...
Yes, you have my vote for you giving money to them, but not me.
And the French said, I'm fully in support of giving...
German money.
$100 billion from Germany.
Yes.
And they know, by the way, this is one of those things that makes me a little more optimistic about Europe. I think everybody concerned is fully aware that this really isn't a loan.
Well,
it's really
not
a
everybody
grant.
Concerned is aware of that.
Really?
The people that are involved in the making of the loan may be aware of that. The German Bundestag may know about it. The government officials may know about it. The economists may know about it, but the layperson does not.
Well, the layperson is not the person who is doing this.
Yeah. That's the thing.
They're not raising the taxes on the layperson.
Let's take a moment. And what you said there is very true as far as those informed. People informed tend to know what's going on, and people uninformed are uninformed. when we're talking about Greece as a whole, when we look at the...
It is. Exactly.
It is a big hole.
It is a hole.
Big hole.
Yes, a Greece
in which you
a
throw
hole.
Money in.
Right. And it disappears and never comes back. Right.
It just goes away.
It's a money shredder.
We've known about the Greek issues for a long time. We were talking about Greece... 4 years ago on this program, 5 years ago on this program, we were talking about Greece. There were other countries involved, if you recall the pigs, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain were the pigs, two eyes in this particular set of pigs.
It's a very strange pig. It's a pig.
Most pigs do have two eyes.
If they don't,
they're one-eyed cyclops pigs. Two eyes in this particular pig. And what we've seen since then is that all of the other letters in pigs have turned around and changed a lot of things. They're still fighting for it, but they've changed a lot of things. They are looking at their governmental spending, and they're looking at all kinds of other things. They have actually increased their efficiency of tax collection. Greece has not. And Greece doesn't really want to. Mm-hmm. And the former economics fellow there in Greece, who, again, I'm not going to attempt his name, He's kind of a rock star figure. He shows up on a motorcycle and a leather jacket and all that good stuff. He said this is a horrible mistake. It's already failed. You're not doing anything good for Greece with this bailout. And to some extent, that's true.
And promptly resigned and went back to Austin.
Well, yeah. Well, he lives in Athens, I think. So
is this the guy who used to be the finance minister?
Yes.
Well, he actually was a professor at the University of Texas in
Austin.
Correct.
Correct. And what he said there is true, in that this is a failed experiment. It's already failed.
Uh-huh.
By creating more cuts in spending, you're not going to make the economy grow.
Mm-hmm.
By concentrating on taking money from people who don't have it, you're not going to make the economy grow.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's strange. But the Germans do still have this opinion that with more austerity, you just stop spending so much. The Greek debt might possibly have some hope of being paid. And the reality is that the more austerity, the worse the economy. The economy of Greece is 49% government spending, which means if you cut it, you cut it. You just look at the result of your spending, and that's 49% of the economy. If you cut 1%, that's 0.5% off of the economy. But that's just the beginning, because those people stop spending money. The people that you cut that money to, and that part
or
of the that part of the economy shrinks too. So you actually get an almost, if you do a 1% cut in the budget of Greece, the governmental budget, and we can look at the last 5 years and see this almost exactly 1% cut is a 1% drop in GDP, and you can't keep doing that and expect to pay the debt back. So they do need a bailout program, but they actually need a bailout program. They need something that would allow them to spend towards growth rather than spend towards debt. This loan that is being given them is to pay off other loans.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's literally what it's for. And when an economic entity, whether it's a family, a company, a municipality, a state or a nation, is in a position where they can't afford even to pay the interest.
Right. We need a loan so that we can pay the interest on our loans.
On existing, in other words, their debt burden is so high that running at full tilt, they're still falling backwards. Yeah. Loaning them more money does not solve the problem.
It does move it further away in time.
Yes, it does.
We just pushed it off down the road. And this is the thing. You know, I know, the Germans are not going to be paid back on this. But the United States stock market, the people that invest in it don't know that. The people that invest in the United States stock market have just seen the stock market drop drastically on the news over the past year or so that Greece may not be able to pay its debts.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that's looked at it for any length of time has known that for a very long period of time already. So our reaction to it is what you were saying. The Germans know. Well, the German government may know, but the German citizen may not know that their government just said we're going to make a loan that we're not going to make any money on.
Oh, actually, I think, I know that's a little strange, but I think a lot of people realize that in Germany.
I don't know. I think people in Germany and in the United States, when it comes to something that is not vital right now, they would rather look at a soundbite to say, look, there's a deal being made with Greece. It looks like this is being solved. It's kind of like the budget ceiling and not lifting the debt ceiling on our loans in the United States. We hear about it, and then it comes up again, and I thought we already dealt with this. Well, no, it's an ongoing thing. And to understand that it's an ongoing thing, it's like saying, I changed my oil, now I never have to do it again in my car. No, you're going to have to do it again, and if you don't, it's the same kind of damage then as now if you don't change your oil. And with Greece,
Well, you have to change your grease.
Yes, they have a whole grease pan.
And you can't change your grease.
Yes, it's
so. By the way, there's an evolution here that is very, very important, I think, to understand. When Texas was suddenly populated by a tremendous number of people who used to be citizens of the United States, when Texas became a republic. One of the ways, and by the way, the people, Sam Houston and, all
Davy
those
Crockett,
guys.
Jim
no,
Bowie.
I'm talking about not the people who died in the revolution, the people who post-revolution said, okay, here we are. There was no question in their mind about a couple of things. Number one, the Mexicans are not going to just sit there and lick their wounds, no matter how much they promise they wouldn't come back and take it. As soon as they feel like they can get away with it, they're going to come back and take this republic back.
Yeah.
Just like the British tried in 1812. Then the second thing that was really, really obvious is there was a whole lot of people who weren't officially people. The Constitution didn't recognize them as human beings. To the west of their settlements, who wore scanty clothes and rode around bareback on horses and and that kind of thing.
Would not have liked the two of us very much because we don't have hair.
Well, yeah, that's true, because they like to remove they were early barbers, surgical barbers. and they have decided that the rest of Texas belonged to them. So between the Comanches and the Mexicans, the Texicans.
This is an early version of what's going on in Ukraine and Georgia with Russia. It's just who owns what? We don't know.
They concluded they need, it was like the West Bank. We need a lot of settlers quickly, okay? And we need the settlers that look like us and talk like us and believe like us. So the United States went into a depression in 1837, and we did not have a bankruptcy law, so that as a result of owing a lot of money, you could either wind up in prison
debtors
or effectively
prison.
Enslaved to your creditors until you worked off the debt, and they had a tendency to work you to death before you worked off the debt.
Right, and keep adding to your debt as you worked it off.
So Texas said, okay, we're not setting up an extradition treaty with the United States for debt. So you, if you can make it to Texas, if you can get across the Sabine River,
then that's bankruptcy law.
A, your debt no longer can follow you, and B, we're going to give you a pretty good-sized chunk of land if you have the ability to farm it.
Correct.
And we'll give it to you free. And people poured into Texas, which, of course, were the word we get gone to Texas, GTT. But here's the thing that is key to that, is we didn't have a bankruptcy law, and eventually Congress figured out that it was a really bad idea to not forgive unworkable debt. And the banks howled, and the conservatives howled and said, we shouldn't do that. But the reality is...
Let me just interjection real quick. The names that I mentioned, Jim Bowie, Davy Crockett, I was going down a list.
Mm.
I wasn't saying that because they died in the Revolution. I was saying that because they came to Texas because they were absolutely bankrupt and had creditors chasing them in the United States. That's why they were saying liberty or death, is because if I go back, I'm going to die there too.
Yeah. So the issue is that eventually we figured out that economically it's far better to allow people to go through a process of keeping certain property. And in Texas, you can keep up to 200 acres of land and your house and a couple of cars and so on, and have your debts wiped off the book. Now,
it's not easy.
You can go through this process, and it's really good to go through that process. Now, the creditors and the banks howled about it, but what happened is, as a result of the process, banks and creditors and mortgage companies, each time we improve on the bankruptcy law, which we just did again, get more and more selective about who they will lend to, and they get more and more responsible because they won't say, well, we'll just lend to these people and we'll dump the debt off on somebody else, and then that piles up and blows up. Well, that, by the way, did in 2008 and 9. The other thing is they said, oh, look at all this property these people own. If we loan them a bunch of money, they'll default on it and we can take their property.
Except that's not the way it works. With credit cards, you don't have collateralized debt.
Well,
I mean, just sounds like we're talking about Ed's program now.
But the whole point is that we have a bankruptcy law in the United States, and it works really, really well. Now,
on the individual and corporate basis, and even to some municipalities.
When you get to municipalities, it works well. But we do not have, it's called Chapter 9 of the Federal Bankruptcy Code, by the way, for municipalities. States cannot declare bankruptcy. Puerto Rico cannot declare bankruptcy. And so we have the potential of Illinois, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and who knows where else.
That the question about Puerto Rico is still open. They filed in federal court back in February to say, please treat us as a municipality for bankruptcy. The first court said no. They appealed it. The appeals court said no. They're probably going to appeal it to the Supreme Court.
Which will probably say no.
Which will probably say no. But right now it's kind of open. Maybe they're a municipality. Maybe they're not. Probably not.
The precedent is that we have no provision for states to declare bankruptcy. But there is a bill... I don't remember which committee it is in the House that's being introduced that would allow a state to declare bankruptcy, which you think, well, that's terrible. Why should a state? Well, among other things, a lot of people flock to municipal bonds issued by states that are in deep trouble because
interest rates are high.
They're sold by brokers. Look here, backed by the full faith and credit and taxing ability of the state of Illinois and this really high interest rate. and it's illegal for a state to declare bankruptcy. Therefore, they will basically shut everybody else out and pay you.
Well, that's not the case anymore.
The courts basically said, no, no, the pensioners trump the bondholders.
That's what happened in Detroit. It was a big groundbreaking thing. The pensioners of the city of Detroit come in line first for the money ahead of the bondholders who were told they were first in line.
Mm-hmm. So we probably need a bankruptcy law. We need to extend Chapter 9 to states.
Yeah.
But the second issue, the European zone, needs a bankruptcy law for nation states.
Yes.
Of course, they also need a constitution so they can enact a bankruptcy law.
Well, Puerto Rico falls into a unique category, not completely unique, but semi-unique category in the United States in that it is both a nation state and a territory.
Well, it's a commonwealth.
With a governorship.
It's an uncommonwealth.
It's an uncommonwealth,
where
yes.
Where you don't have to pay federal income taxes.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of issues there.
And a lot of people don't pay taxes at all.
Right. So the concept of how we manage bankruptcy has been evolving, has been changing for 200 years more in the United States. And that we went from debtor's prisons to, okay, we have to recognize that you don't get any blood from a turnip. If you arrest someone, put them in jail, or make them work for you to work their debt off, they're not going to be as productive in working off the debt as if you forgive some of it and get it back.
Yeah.
And that's,
You can even forgive all of it and let them start over with no credit.
Right.
And it is far better for everyone concerned than it is to try to squeeze them. And by the way, that same philosophy extends to the United States. There are people in Congress, for example, who believe we have too much debt.
Yep.
But, and this is the dysfunctional way it works, the House of Representatives is where those people mainly reside.
Yep, and that's where all the spending bills come from.
Right. The spending bills are passed by the House of Representatives, and then when it comes time to increase our debt load to spend the money that is mandated by the House of Representatives, we don't do it. And by the way, we are currently at our debt ceiling.
We've been there for
March.
How we've gone from March to July at the debt ceiling is an interesting factor.
Well, deferring, what happens is the Treasury defers payments into
pensions,
into government pensions, which would be illegal if anybody else did it.
Well, except that that's what's happening in Illinois and elsewhere. Is the state of Illinois, the state of New Jersey is 75% underfunded in its pensions.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S. government's not anywhere near that. Yeah, that's a time bomb. Those things, what a nation state does and what a state does, if they're doing something as far as how they're preparing for pensions in a way that would not be applied to a municipality or to a corporation, then there's something wrong, something majorly wrong. And the reason why the federal government got involved with General Motors in their bankruptcy, and we've had this conversation back and forth as to whether or not they should have done it, it was in essence a new form of bankruptcy for a larger corporation than has ever been bankrupt before. It's so big a corporation, the same true with Fannie and Freddie, so big a corporation that if it went through normal bankruptcy, it would wreck the whole economy.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to do a unique form of structured bankruptcy without calling it bankruptcy, where the United States government stepped in and took over and did a bunch of stuff, acted as a trustee, which means that we need a bankruptcy code for the too big to fail type things. And in that case, we're talking about states as well. Illinois is too big to fail. New Jersey is too big to fail, and yet nobody is saying, well, we should break up the states into smaller organizations. Texas, I think, is the only state in the nation that's allowed to break itself into five states, according to Constitution, and when we were added to the country, that was part of the deal, is that we would be able to break into five states. We've never done that, but no other state's even allowed to do that. And too big to fail is very true. If Illinois goes down in an unstructured bankruptcy, then people are going to go out of business across the nation because there's no structure to hold that bankruptcy. There's no structure to say these monies are prioritized to pay off these debts.
The courts, the federal courts, will ultimately step in, and the state courts will step in.
Well, the federal courts and state courts have to follow laws that are already on the books.
But the state courts have already indicated, for example, in Chicago, which also is going to apply to the state of Illinois, Chicago wanted to cut pensions.
Right.
Just cut the pensions and continue to pay the bondholders.
And the court said no.
No, they said that federal law and state law require pensioners to be in line in front. It's the same thing that happened in Detroit. And they shouldn't have been too surprised at it. But
right.
But the reality is that, you know, what does this boil down to you? I mean, if you're an investor, what does it mean?
We're doing a lot of doom and gloom.
This for a long time, we have been warning people about municipal bonds. And municipal bonds have not blown up unless you happen to own Puerto Rico or Detroit. But when we first started warning people about municipal bonds, the municipal bond insurance agencies were still AAA rated. Now many of them are bankrupt. And
there's no insurance left in most cases for municipal bonds.
And the point is that municipal bonds, and it's a point of, and you may have cruised along with municipal bonds getting a relatively high tax-exempt municipal rate at the federal level for some time and thinking, boy, these guys are just unduly alarmist or whatever you want to say, or full of something. But the reality is, in economics, when a higher interest rate applies to a bond, it has increased risk. And if you look at the after-tax relationship between, I would go so far as to say, most municipal debt in the United States and Treasury debt, because you have to pay federal income taxes on treasuries, on Treasury interest, and you look at the difference, you'll see that the municipal bonds are priced at much higher interest rates than the risk-free, considered to be generally risk-free if held to maturity, rates that are issued by the Treasury. And people say, okay, so that means I make more money and it's just as safe. No,
not just as safe.
And in many cases,
more money doesn't come with just as safe. Just as safe needs to be taken out of that sentence because more money means risky.
Right. And this is and so very, very conservative investors tend to buy municipal bonds because they are, and I quote, safe, end quote. The only reason they think they're safe is because the broker who sells it to them, who wants the commission, tells them they're safe. And they tell them that in a chorus of safe, 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 safe.
Right.
And for the same reason, by the way, this is important, at least to me, for the same reason that people believed Greek debt was safe.
Right.
Because Greek debt, under the Eurozone Convention, was carried at face value by banks, and if you went to sell it, for example, if you went to sell your Greek bond to a bank, they had to buy it at the face value unless you participated in the haircut deal or not buy it at all.
Everybody participated in the haircut deal that had the bonds. That was the deal. It had to be unanimous.
But this is the point right now. We work through a custodian that's also a clearing agent for the investments that we buy and sell on behalf of our clients. And
we work through a bunch of them, but this one in particular.
The one that actually can buy and sell securities on the open market, including internationally. And every day they remind us that Greek securities are not being traded.
Right.
Period.
And there's a bank holiday that's been extended. Right. And we get an email every day saying the bank holiday, as if a bank holiday is a really nice thing in
Greece. It is. It's a holy day.
You can go to have a bank holiday in Greece. Wouldn't that be fun?
But the point is, they're just not accepting any offered trades in Greek securities. In other words, if you had a Greek bond, and you say, well, of course, I wouldn't have had a Greek bond. Well, people did because
how about
a Puerto Rico bond or a Illinois municipal bond, or when it looked like California was going down the tubes, a California bond. And very frankly, I'm going to tell you something that's going to make some people unhappy. If, and we don't know that this, I have no inkling that such a thing will happen, by the way. But let's just say that in the Defense Department, they looked at their budget and they said, goodness gracious, we're spending phenomenal quantities of money on heavy tanks that are a long ways from a seaport. And they said, let's just shut Fort Hood down.
They've already cut 15,000
troops. So let's just say they shut Fort Hood down permanently. And you had a completely safe, absolutely no-risk municipal bond from KISD or from the University of Central Texas, whoever else issues bonds, municipal, and they are Colleen or Copperas Cove or whatever, you might want to take a really deep breath at that point. Because only theoretically is the state of Texas required to back those. No one has ever tested
that. It's not been tested.
So, and you look at the interest rate you get on a local bond right here in Central Texas, and you look at your tax rate, and you figure this is my equivalent taxable rate, and you realize you're getting a high interest rate for buying a local bond. You're getting that high interest rate because there's a risk.
Yeah, there's a localized industry that may change, and the reason why it changes is because of decisions made many hundreds of miles away with not a whole lot of reference points to where we live today.
And again, I don't want to be misquoted here saying Jeff McClure says Fort Hood's going to be shut down, because I don't think that's true. I don't see any evidence of that whatsoever. Is it a possibility? Oh, yes.
Yeah, absolutely, it's a possibility. Any base, any post is possibly going to be shut down in any given year. Just depends on the whims of Congress, and that's really what they do. They have whims. It's amazing.
And then, very frankly, whoever is elected next as president, during the 4 to 8 years that follow that election, major restructuring in the United States budget is either going to happen or we're going to be in a world of hurt. And the major restructuring is there's an awful lot of legacy things that we were doing that don't make any sense at all if we had to start them up from zero. Fort Hood was put where it is during World War II because the land was cheap. And the railroad access was there. Two very good reasons, however, neither of which apply today.
They're not very valid reasons today.
Okay, so we have to do commercials. And we're going to do that, and you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach, and we'll be back on the other side with more of The Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And first off, a word about the commercials that you just heard, presuming that this is a live show and it's July 18th. Of 2015. If you just heard the commercials, there were two commercials there that involved flipping houses, followed by another one that you're going to need debt relief.
They may go together.
I think they go together. Suffice to say, A, we don't agree with those positions. B, I have certainly encountered people who flipped houses and the houses fell on top of their head. And C,
we've also met people that have done well flipping houses, but that's pretty rare.
I've never met anybody. Now, I've met people who have bought foreclosed houses and spent a significant amount of sweat and energy and time fixing them up and then either renting or selling them.
Right. It's not something a busy professional might be doing.
But the issue of flipping houses with no risk and using other people's money is fictitious, to say the least.
Yeah. Just think about it a second. Using whose money?
And the point is that the potential is there for you to need Ed Laughlin's services as a bankruptcy attorney in record time if you do that, no matter what the guy says.
I've got something.
There is no wealth without risk.
Yeah, I've got something on here that is a really good cue. You've got a housing starts report. And so I'm going to bring that in here. It sounds dry at the beginning. Please bear with me for the dryness, because there's some interesting tidbits in here.
Well, we've had a lot of rain lately, so that's
okay. Yeah, lots of good rain. Housing starts in June increased by 9.8%. That was a lot higher than they expected. And one of the things that we look at in the economy when we're looking for leading indicators is housing starts, because that has a really big impact later on down the road in the economy. That's a really good number. It's huge. A 9.8% increase in housing starts is huge. And versus a year ago, we're talking about a 26.6% increase. So,
in other words, over 1 year's time, not 1 month a year ago.
Right. So if you go back to June of last year, and I'm guessing you just got a brain freeze.
Mm-mm,
no.
It's okay.
If you go back to June of last year and compare the number of housing starts that we have in June of this year, we have a 26.6% increase. Now, this is an important piece. The new building permits increased, but the biggest part was multifamily homes. That's where all of this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we can explain that for a second. It's hard to get a mortgage right now if your credit's not so good, for the same reasons that we were talking about with Greece not very long ago. A new bankruptcy code, we've got more difficulty in recognizing when debts are actually going to be paid back, so the banks are being very careful about who they give mortgages to. So if you have good credit, a lot of people are buying up houses that will be multifamily, or they're starting new houses that are multifamily, so that they can rent to people that have bad credit. You've got to recognize some things in here. The risk that's being taken by the landlord was the risk that the banks just got hit with when people defaulted on the houses. As a new landlord, if you're getting into this and saying rent is a great idea, first off, it's cheap to get money right now if you have good credit. You've got really low interest rates. They're not as low as they were a few months ago, but they're really, really low. So it sounds okay. The cost of that is really great. You turn around and you charge rent on a house to someone who's paying you more than the mortgage. If you're doing the management yourself, then you get to keep some of that extra money. If you have a management team, 10% of the rent generally will go to the management company. So just keep that in mind. So 10%, that's before your expenses, goes out to management. You're taking on the risk then of saying, I'm going to make enough more than the mortgage from the rent after 10% reduction and after repairs and so on. You need to go into this and say, what amount of money do you need to make every month in order to make that a reasonable investment for the risk? And the risk is that 1 month, the renter may not have the money to pay the rent. Another month, there may not be a renter.
And the renter that's in there now may trash the house on the way out.
Right. So you've got a lot of risks that you're taking there, and it's the same risks that the bank was taking in giving loans to people that couldn't afford the house. If you recognize the risk and are capable of charging enough to make a long-term profit without being a scumbag, then that's how professional commercial renting agencies work. This is how apartment complexes work. If you're doing it for the first time, know that there are some other dangers out there. If you're doing a house, if you're making a house based on the idea that you're going to rent it out, as nice as the mortgages look right now, they're going to say, here's a great mortgage. But what you're going to discover is in a commercial loan, it's different than your normal mortgage. You're not going to be able to get a 30-year loan on a rental. That's a big one, because if you get that 30-year loan, you'd be very, very lucky if you did.
Well, they do assumptions.
Assumptions?
Yeah. A lot of times what happens is a person wants out of a house.
Right.
And the mortgage allows for somebody else to assume the loan.
Right.
And then somebody will step in and assume the loan. And in many cases, by the way, this is what the flipping houses is all about.
Right.
Basically, the credit responsibility remains with the
original party.
With the original party. However, this is what they don't tell you, is that once they realize that you took the house and you effectively purchased the house, they can turn around and file a court action against you.
Yeah.
And you can wind up with the total debt plus all kinds of other things loaded on your head at Mach 5.
Is it possible to do this and make a profit? Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. No question about that. But it is a business. It is something that takes management. It is something that you have to approach in that way. It is not the same as buying a bankruptcy house, a foreclosed house, and fixing it up with your own sweat and money and then flipping it that way. I knew a lot of people that made money during the downturn in the market by buying foreclosed houses, fixing them up thinking they were going to live there, turning around and selling them for a huge profit, and then doing it again. But it's not going to be as easy to do that anymore. There's less foreclosures.
You can still, if you want to work at this really hard, there's still a potential to make money, but there is a big risk even among the people who buy a foreclosed house. you know, that's sold on auction, that's in bad shape, and they have the skills and the time and the expertise to fix the house up. And that is, if in the interim while you're holding the house, again, one of two things happens. Either there is a big crisis overseas and Fort Hood deploys.
Right.
Or the Congress in its infinite wisdom and the President and the Department of Defense decide that Fort Hood just really doesn't need all these troops anymore because we need to cut heavy armor. And then believe me, those are both things that have happened in the past and will happen again at some point. If you happen to be holding the house between the time that you shelled out the money and you're paying and you have the liability and you have an additional liability from all the money that you put into it to fix it up, and then all of a sudden the bottom falls out of the housing market, or like what is happening around Fort Hood right now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's a lot of new houses being built around Fort Hood.
Right.
And all of a sudden people get a $1 move-in available to them, and they're not going to buy your refurbished house.
Right.
And so there's risk. You can make money if you're willing to take risk long-term, you're willing to take short-term risk, and you're willing to put a lot of time and effort into it. You can make you can make money in real estate. There's no doubt about that. But the no-risk, full-time professional who can just flip houses easily
it's a fig tree and somebody's amalgamation.
That's it.
It's
okay.
A figment of our imagination. That easy money concept that people pay a lot of advertising money to tell you that you can get if you just pay them the right amount of money to tell you how to do it. Just know that that's what they're doing. You're going to have to pay them money so that they can tell you how to easily make money.
Okay, I want to throw something else in. By the way, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and this is July 18th. You're welcome to give us a call. But I want to throw one other thing in here. There's another factor in here that when we look at a recent history, it's easy to miss. There are two different elements in our society that generate inflation or non-inflation.
Right.
One is the purchase of product, and the other one is purchase of services.
Yes.
Product, for instance, excellent article in the Real-Time Economics in the Wall Street Journal today. Says why TV sets are cheap and cable bills not so much. There's a really fascinating point there, which I had outlined, and I don't see it in the article. Okay. Anyway, the point is that – oh, okay, different article. I'll get to it in a second. The point is that if you tried to buy a suit several years ago –
like a clothing suit.
A new suit cost 3.7% less than it did 5 years ago. In other words, your actual dollar cost national average on a new suit at Men's Warehouse or someplace is 3.7% less than it cost 5 years ago. However,
let me give us an explanation. A suit is a really important thing because it's handcrafted in a lot of cases.
Well, but it's made somewhere else and imported.
Right. And now, we can use that to say how much was a gold coin worth in 1800? How much did it cost to make a new suit for someone? And that's a really good comparison.
So a new suit costs 3.7% less. Now, I want to say that you say it's handcrafted. It's imported and made largely by computers and machines now. However,
this
is the contrast I want to say. Getting that suit dry cleaned here in the United States will cost you 9.2% more than it did 5 years ago.
Right.
So the dry cleaning has gone up 9.2% while the cost of the new product has dropped 3.7% in the same period.
I see what you're saying. We should just throw away our suits every time they're dirty.
That's coming. So another one is an example. A new television over the last 5 years has dropped in price 58%.
Yeah.
The cable service that allows you to watch the television now costs 13.7% more than it did 5 years ago. And why? Why the difference? Difference is in
cable companies are losing money because people are leaving cable.
Well, it's actually really simple. The cable companies are now producing new shows on their own. That's labor intensive. Anything that involves people in the United States actually doing work costs more than it did 5 years ago. Anything where you can just purchase a product that is made somewhere else or made by a computer
costs less
than it did. And that's why, depending on which measure of inflation, if you use a general measure of inflation, it's virtually zero. If you use some other measures that called the mean indexing, which throws out the outliers, we had 2% inflation over the last 12 months. Well, we're about out of time. This is the Personal Wealth Coach.
Yeah, out of time for this hour anyway. Next hour, we will be back.
And if you want to give us a call off the air and talk to us during the week or get our voicemail on the weekend, you can give us a call at 947-1111.
You can also reach that voicemail during the weekend. It is actual people answer it during the week at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can reach us at email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and you can listen to podcasts of this program. Will be up on Monday, but past programs are there. You can read our philosophy, read a lot of our newsletters are up there, and we're probably going to have more. And a lot of what they say is basically what we've been talking about. Do your research. Nothing is free unless it's valueless. So until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.